In the last lesson, we have seen how to synchronize two partners of communication through the so-called isochronous technique. Today, we see a completely different approach into which, instead of exchanging the clock that synchronizes the communication, the sender and the receiver have their own independent clocks, regardless one to the other. Of course, we have to assume that clocks are similar and stable. We can't assume that one transmits at 1 MHz and that the other one receives at 1 Hz, of course. But there is no constraint at all on the fact that the two clocks must be equal. Instead, a certain degree of tolerance is allowed, from 1% to 3% maximum of difference, considering standard transmission values, I mean from 300 Hz up to more than 10 kHz. The synchronization between the two interlocutors is established at the byte level by using suitable bits that are definitively low and definitively high for a duration that exceeds typically the duration of one transmitted bit. That is, the interval of time into which these bits are transmitted is 1.5, one half the duration of a bit, or sometimes twice. These bits are called start and stop. The start is definitively low and the stop is definitively high. Message synchronization, on the other hand, will be obtained through silence intervals into which the line is kept to a high level between a character and the next one. A phase shift between the window of time into which the sender transmits a bit and the receiver samples it is allowed, and the maximum shift is plus minus half the window. We will see the motivation for this. Each byte is synchronized when the first bit is received. In the slide 25, a suitable sequence is shown, into which we see that the first transmitted bit is the start bit. Then we have the sequence of the bits that represent the content of the information exchange, beginning with the least significant one and ending with the most significant one. Then we have the parity bit, that is, we know, a kind of checksum control bit, and finally the stop one. The velocity is typically in the order of kilobit per second, even 100 kilobit per second. However, clearly, such a kind of very, let's say, tolerant approach is possible, paying the price of a loss in the efficiency of the transmission, since at least we have two bits, for example, on 11, transmitted in such a kind of example that we presented in slide 25. Because we have 8 bits for the byte transmitted, the parity, the stop, and the start one. And this means that in terms of efficiency, we lose approximately from the 15 to the 20% of the possible transmission rate. Let's see a further set of considerations about the possibility that the two clocks are not equal, but they must be similar. And let's see what happens if this requirement is not respected. In the slide 26, we see a sequence of bits that are transmitted. They are shown from the receiver point of view. The sequence that is shown in the picture is called RxD. And we see the sequence of the values correspondingly to the time into which the transmitter samples the line, that is, writes the proper value onto its own line shared with the receiver, and we see also the moment into which the receiver samples them on the basis of its own receiving clock synchronization rate. And finally, with Q, we see what is the real information gained by the receiver due to the fact that the two clocks are not exactly equal, but there is a little difference that makes the second clock, the clock of the receiver, a little bit larger than the first one. So the frequency of the receiver is slower than the transmitter one. In the example, we see that the transmitter puts the value, writes the value onto the shared line correspondingly to its own raising edge of the clock, and the same happens for the receiver unit. But as we see by the picture, with a certain degree of a phase shift of delay that makes in the first clock the receiver sampling the data line correspondingly to the moment into which the transmitter clock goes to low, is in the falling edge. So the first value, the start value, is sampled in the correct way by the receiving unit. The second value that corresponds to a 1 is sampled again correctly, but we see that we are going very close to the edge of the data line, of the datum. And in the third clock, the receiving unit samples the data line in a point that is ambiguous because it corresponds to the raising edge of the value written by the transmitter onto the line. In this case, if we are lucky, we really read the correct value, 1. If we are not lucky, we will read 0. That is the previous value written onto the line. But the situation that is completely not acceptable is that if one is not read in this case, we will not read it anymore, because the next time the clock of the receiver will sample the zero value of the data line. On the other hand, if in the previous case we have read 0, we have lost, conversely, the previous 0 value written by the transmitter onto the data line. So the clear result from this analysis is that the shift in phase between receiving and the transmitting units and the slight difference in the duration of the clocks brings sooner or later to lose some data or to perform ambiguous acquisitions that sometimes could be correct, sometimes not. Therefore, a good policy is to re-synchronize the clock of the receiver at every start bit, and to locate the active edges. For example, in this case, the receiving unit samples the line at every raising edge, I repeat, to locate the active edges as much as possible in the center of the window of time, so as to avoid the sampling in the edges, correspondingly to the edges, where the commutation can take place, and clearly where an ambiguous acquisition could happen. This allows to tolerate slight differences between sender and recipient and receiver clocks, because we eliminate basically the shift delay between transmitting and receiving unit, and we try to be very very conservative as much as possible by sampling the signal in the center of the time window. This means that the maximum acceptable phase shift on 10 bit corresponds, due to the fact that we sample in the middle of the time window, to plus minus half window. Plus minus will mean that the shift could be in delay or in advance, but half a window on 10 bit corresponds to plus minus 5%, and this is what is shown in the final part of slide 26, where moreover we indicate also what happens when the transmission velocity is very close to the band limit of the medium that we have considered. In this case, in fact, edges cannot be considered so vertical, so squared as we typically think, but instead they are characterized by a certain degree of sloping, due to the fact that the response of the medium to the transmission is no more immediate, but features a certain degree of delay. This makes the amplitude of the time window into which transmission and acquisition can take place shorter than before, and clearly this is another motivation for performing the acquisition as much as possible in the center of the window, so as to allow a certain margin of, let's say, inclination to the edges of the clock signal, both considering the rising one and considering the falling one. A completely different approach is given by the so-called synchronous technique, into which we try to make the clock of the transmitter exactly equal to the clock of the receiving unit. This is possible by means of the presence of a suitable mechanism called PLL, phase lock loop, in the receiving unit, whose general architecture is shown in slide 27. Here we can see that the signal coming through the input channel from the transmitter is compared with a signal generated locally by a bistable unit by a phase comparator, and the output of this one, corresponding to the difference between what arrived from the transmitter and what was generated locally, is provided to the control unit of the PLL to adapt the bistable frequency so as to reach basically the frequency of the input signal, and this is obtained when the VU output of the comparator will be equal to zero. The general concept of the transmission foresees the presence of suitable characters that are sent at the beginning of the communication to favor the phase coupling. These characters must be rich of commutations to help the phase comparator to establish the difference in phase between signals coming from the transmitter and the locally generated clock. For example, in the slide, we suggest the sequence AAAA and A6 and A6. However, between them, the last one, A6A6, is preferred to the AAAA sequence. In fact, if during the acquisition of these synchronization characters, the PLL mechanism should lose a part of the sequence transmitted, the recognition of the error will happen only at the end of the set of characters sent if we choose AAAA. Instead, if we choose A6A6, the recognition of the error will be in practice immediately, because the logic of the PLL expects an A, then a 6, then an A, and then another 6. In other words, it is correct to send synchronization characters with many commutations, but we must be careful to avoid equal sequences of characters. Again, because if an error happens, the equal sequence, the set of characters all equal to themselves, will be not suitable for an immediate recognition of a problem in the communication between transmitter and receiver. Typically, from 3 to 5 characters for the synchronization are sent at the beginning of the communication to make the clock generated at the receiving location to be equal to the clock generated at the transmitting location. In slide 28, a little bit more detailed explanation is given about how the PLL works. Since we see the input channel from the transmitter that brings the sequence of the pulses, codifying the synchronization characters, compared by the phase comparator through with the sequence of pulses generated by the bistable. If there is a difference due to the phase shift between local and remote sequence of characters, the output of the phase comparator will be a sequence of other pulses, not necessarily with the same duration of the previous one, that will be sent to a simply low-pass filter used since it provides the average of the input signal. And this average of the input signal will be given in turn to a voltage-controlled oscillator device, an electronic circuit with the property of generating a pulse train in output whose frequency is proportional to the value of the input voltage plus a certain basic frequency that, in absence of input signal, the VCO generates as well. This is the mechanism that allows to adapt the local clock to the remote one, because up to when we have a difference between what arrives from the transmitter and what is generated locally, the output of the phase comparator will be always different from zero, so generating a voltage value that the VCO will enter, modifying its own frequency in the output pulse train generated, so to have at the end a zero difference between the input channel and the locally generated signal. This will turn out in having a output of the comparator that will be zero, So 0 will be the average of the low pass filter, and the VCO output will be set to the previous frequency that we have obtained. The presented mechanism clearly is more complex than those we have seen previously in the isochronous and asynchronous approaches, but it allows more velocity and the compensation of jitters phenomena eventually present on the clock signal. On the other hand, its implementation is a little more expensive than in the other two cases. Another issue that must be taken into account in digital serial communication is the so-called baseband encoding. That is a codification applied to the signal transmitted so as to reinforce it, so as to make it more robust with respect to the possible noise present into the line. Typically, in industrial applications, we can recognize a not reduced to zero encoding technique, a reduced to zero encoding technique in Manchester, and a not reduced to zero inverted encoding technique. In the first case, the signal level is kept constant throughout the bit time, but if long sequences of equal bits in the signal are sent, this technique could fail. So, an alternative that has been conceived is the so-called reduced to zero approach, into which the signal level is kept only for a bit time fraction. Then the level of the signal comes back to zero. In this case, the problem of long sequences of ones is solved, but not vice versa. The not reduced to zero inverted technique solves this kind of problem. In fact, the value 0 is coded, maintaining the signal level throughout the period. This level corresponds to the 1 of the last transmitted bit. But if a 1 is received, this 1 causes a level transition, a commutation, from low to high or vice versa, depending on the particular convention that has established. Compared to the to the value of the last transmitting bit, a 1 works as an inverter. On the other hand, if the transition level is due to a logic 0, it solves the problem caused by the transmission of long sequences of zeros. Manchester is a very simple idea that divides the bit time in two portions equally long. Each bit will be sent as the sequence of two not return to zero coded bits, each in half of the time window. That is, the bit 1 is transmitted as 0 and 1, while the bit 0 is transmitted as a 1 plus a 0. This halves the transmission efficiency, that is, per each bit to transmit, indeed, 2 are sent. In practice, a bandwidth is required twice as much as it would be sent necessary. Anyway, it is pretty used in local Ethernet and token ring networks. Finally, we can find also the union of the Manchester concept and the non-reduced to zero inverted concept, and this is called the differential Manchester. In slide 30, an example of baseband binary encoding is shown related to the sequence of bits 100-1101. The first codification proposed is not return to zero, where a 1 is a high-level logic voltage, while a 0 is a low-level logic voltage, so the sequence is straightforward. Not return to zero inverted, instead, shows how the logic of inverting and keeping the signal works. in this particular case, we see that 0 inverts the previous level considered, while 1 keeps the same level. So the first one is defined as a whatever level, but the immediately after following 0 inverts the level, and the next 0 will invert again the level, bringing the signal to high. The following couple of ones will keep the signal high, so we have a high level and a high level. Then we have a 0 that will invert the signal again. Now the level of the signal is low. And finally we have a 1 that will keep stable the signal, so we will remain with the low level. In the Manchester approach, we can appreciate the division of the bit time into two parts. The first one corresponds to a certain level, and the second one corresponds to a different level. In other words, the commutation corresponds to the logic value that we want to transmit. Looking at the B phase Manchester approach, for example, we see that the rising edge corresponds to one logic level, and the falling edge corresponds to the zero level that we want to transmit. So 100 correspond to a commutation towards high, two following commutations toward zero. Then we have a couple of ones, so we have the repetition of two commutations from 0 to 1. We have a 0, so we have a commutation from 1 to 0, and finally the last one will correspond to the commutation from 0 to 1. And looking at the general shape of the sequence of the signal that are transmitted, it is clear that the number of the commutations is greater compared to the previous 1-2 approaches. That will help the PLL mechanism in docking in the correct way the clock of the transmitter, and in keeping this clock properly docked. The differential Manchester approach, as we said, joins the typical Manchester philosophy together with a concept like the one shown in the not return to zero inverted codification. In other words, the value of the bit that we want to transmit doesn't correspond to the commutation, but corresponds to the idea of keeping the previous kind of commutation of the previous bit transmitted, or inverting it. For example, in this last sequence of bits, we see that the one is clearly chosen as the level that causes an inversion in the commutation, while the zero will repeat the previous one. So the first one corresponds to commutation from high to low. The following two zeros will repeat the same commutations, so again from high to low, from high to low. Then the following couple of ones will invert the commutation. We have in the first case an edge from zero to high, and in the second case an edge from high to zero. And the subsequent zero will repeat the last commutation from high to zero, while the last one will invert the direction of the commutation from low to high. Again, we notice that the number of the commutations has considerably increased, and this, as we said, will improve the efficiency of the PLL mechanism. Finally, for sake of completeness, slide 30 shows the possibility of further encoding performed through modulation. This is another policy that tries to defend the signal from the noise. transforming the signal into a shape into which the chosen modulation is responsible for the transmission of the information. We know that the modulation can be in width, in frequency, and in phase, and in the picture the three possible modes are shown. Depending on the fact, for example in the first picture, that the amplitude of the signal is high or a little bit lower than the previous one, we will transmit two different informations to the receiver. Concerning frequency modulation, we see that in the first case the frequency is higher than in the second case. About phase modulation, finally, we simply invert the phase with respect to the one that corresponds to the zero logic level bit that we want to transmit. In all the three policies, I repeat, the information is related to the particular type of modulation we choose, and the baseband signal is provided to the modem, which will carry out the specific one that we have taken into account. Such a kind of policy is used often when communicating with modems or telephone lines, radio link or coaxial cables. Concerning the possible values of voltages that typically characterize the serial communication, we have to consider TTL levels, so voltages ranging in the interval from 0 volts to 5 or 3.3 volts. Bipolar voltages, minus 6 volts plus 6 volts, like in the RS-232 communication protocol. Differential voltages, as we will see in the RS-485, and current loop 20 mA. We give a little bit more details about such a kind of hardware transmission form, because it is quite unusual to find the heat, but the theoretical principle on which it is based is very easy. First of all, let's remember that such a kind of transmission policy, transmission hardware, is used for low baud rates, no more than 2400 bits per second. However, it allows to have a very high noise immunity due to the fact that the mechanism used for the transmission basically is the optical one, so length in the order of miles are allowed by such a kind of technique. As we can see in the picture shown in slide 32, we have a transmitter unit that is located in the left part of the slide, and a receiving unit that is located in the right part of the slide. The transmitting unit manages a TTL input connected to the cathode of a diode. When the TTL is low, the diode sends a light beam to a photomultiplier, and when TTL is high, the diode is switched off. We know that a photomultiplier is excited, will be active, in other words, if its own base is beaten by a light beam. So when TTL is zero, the photomultiplier is crossed by a current that, supposing it is working in saturation, more or less is around to 20 milliampere, since the drain of such a photomultiplier will be close to zero, and VCC 5 volts divided by 250 ohms, like we show in the figure, corresponds more or less to that kind of current. The drain will be set to a logic low level voltage that will be sent to the other remote point of at the receiver location, and in particular at the anode connection of the diode shown in the right part of the figure. A zero volt, a zero logic level in the anode of the diode will prevent it from emitting a light beam, and this means that the final photomultiplier will be in interdiction, so no current will cross it, and the TTL out point will be to a voltage corresponding again to a low level logic voltage. Of course, if we set TTL in to 1, the photomultiplier will be in interdiction, the current crossing the 250 ohms will be oriented towards the diode. Here we will have more or less a voltage enough high to keep the diode in active, so a light beam will will strike the basis of the final multiplier, photomultiplier, and a current will cross it, so giving a proper voltage drop on the 470 ohm resistor shown in the right part of the picture, and the TTL out level will be different from zero, that corresponds to a high logic level, a 1 received by the transmitting by the receiving unit. So such a kind of circuit is able to transform the communication of the information into an optical signal that is sent with a very robust current in a circuit that can reach the length that we have mentioned before, and is used for slow serial communications at that distance. We have seen how to synchronize signals and how to codify them into the medium. Before entering into real communication protocols and to see how to manage the sequence of information that we want to transmit together, those that are necessary to manage them, let's say a couple of words about those techniques that will assure the correctness of the transmission. In other words, we know that there is the possibility of recognizing errors, sometimes even to correct them. This because it is impossible to make a shield so strong on the communication cables so as to avoid a certain error rate. Modern techniques allow us to recognize the errors, but the price that we have to pay is that we have to add redundancy information to what we are transmitting, so basically the robustness of the transmission can be increased at the price of bandwidth reduction. In the slide that follows, some techniques are presented related to Hamming codification, cyclic redundancy check, and others that are the most popular that can be found in industrial application. Let's consider the cyclic redundancy check policy and the following idea. The information that we are sending to the receiver is a sequence of bits, for example 1, 0, 1, 0, 1, 1. That is what we want to transmit. And we could think to associate a polynomial expression to this sequence of bits, just taking into account the position of the bits. Therefore, with respect to the previous mentioned sequence of bits, we will have a polynomial function that is equal to x power 5 plus x power 3 plus x plus x power 0. We call this polynomial function mx. If the rank of the polynomial m of x is m lowercase, then we can build a new polynomial function m plus r in terms of ranking by multiplying the previous one, m of x, times x power r. This is equivalent to add r bits set to 0 on the right side of the original sequence that we wanted to transmit, and that will correspond to the new polynomial x power r times m of x. The new sequence of bits that we have identified is 1, 0, 1, 0, 1, 1, the original ones, plus a set of zeros whose number is equal to the number r of the polynomial function by which we multiplied m of x. This is done in the transmitting unit. Now, it is necessary that both the transmitter and the receiver define a new polynomial j of x function shared among them, so as the product of x power r times m of x is equal to j of x times a suitable quotient plus a rest of the division of x power r times m divided by j. The idea is that the j function is a good and shared divisor for the sequence x power r times m, and when the receiving unit will receive the x power r m sequence, it will divide it by j, and it will control if the rest sent together with the sequence corresponds to the rest of its own calculation. If the correspondence is present, the communication is okay, otherwise not. It's not so easy to implement this, so as the specific constraints in terms of velocity of the transmission are respected. So often in the receiving unit and in the transmitting unit, specific hardware is added to perform these calculations. And this added hardware must be very fast to perform such a kind of transformation. Typically, FPGA or ASIC hardware circuits are employed for such a job. Another technique that can be used to protect data, to detect errors, or sometimes to recover the original signal, is called Hamming codification. In this case, we add some bits to those that represent the content of the information sent. Those bits allow not only to identify the error, but also to reconstruct the original information. But again, the message is the same as for cyclic redundancy check. If we want to make the transmission more robust with respect to the noise, we need to reduce the bandwidth and to add redundancy of in the transmission itself. Another approach is to consider the retransmission of the signal. That is, if we find a mistake on what has been sent, and of course on what has been received, let's simply ask for a retransmission, and this will work well if the origin of the problem is not deterministic. In fact, if the problem that originated the error in the transmission is deterministic, that is, it repeats also when we ask for a retransmission, of course, such a kind of policy doesn't work and we will fail again.